Hello, I'm Jordan Marr, and this is Farming in British Columbia, a podcast that doesn't mind being recorded in a ramshackle garage because that's what keeps it from getting a big head. My guest today is Wiley Bystedt, a farmer based in Quesnel and the current board chair of the British Columbia Association of Farmers Markets. Wiley Bystedt, welcome to Farming in British Columbia.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jordan. It's great to be here.
Wiley joined me on the phone to trumpet a recent study conducted at the University of Northern British Columbia that confirms what Wiley already knew, that farmers markets in BC are growing in popularity and economic impact. We'll talk about that study, as well as the current state of farmers markets in the province. And Wiley will tell you what she thinks farmers markets need in order to be even better. Wiley's experience as a farmers market vendor goes back many years. She had just moved to Quesnel and purchased a ranch there, and had decided to focus her sales in faraway Vancouver because she was skeptical she could count on selling meat where she lived.
My assumption was that if you live in a rural community, that you would have easy access to fresh local food, that you would know your neighbor, you would know your local rancher, and would be able to get food. That wasn't the case. So I rewrote my business plan to include farmers markets and selling at the market. And I think from that point, I actually became a really good example of how farmers markets can incubate growth and business potential.
Wiley loved the Quesnel market and was so impressed by what it did to help grow her business that she felt inspired to give back. She first joined the BC Association of Farmers Markets as a board member in 2013 and has been serving that board off and on ever since. One of the first things I asked her was why the BCAFM exists.
The BCAFM is important in terms of providing some real overarching support for local markets. It's the only venue that we have to provide training and support to market managers. It provides us that umbrella organization to work on different ministries, so everything from tourism and health and the Ministry of Agriculture. And for any one market to take on all of that would just not be sustainable for any local market. So having a provincial association serves the membership really well in terms of bringing support and services to each market and then to each community. The vendors then, you know, have services that are brought to them through things like our insurance program and other resources through the marketing that we do to support the communities. And so really everyone wins.
Incidentally, do you remember all the uncertainty around keeping people safe during the very early days of the pandemic? This led to a ton of chaos around maintaining people's ability to just get food, including at the farmers market. And this was exactly the kind of problem the BCAFM exists for.
The BCAFM was meeting at least weekly, and some weeks it was much more frequently than that, with the Center for Disease Control, which was managing the rollout of a lot of the COVID restrictions. And so we were at the table and working with them on making decisions on what this looks like in terms of local communities being able to stay open and feed their communities. So things like how markets could stay open, what services could they provide, that all came about because BCFM was at the table with the provincial bodies, helping to provide them with the information so that they could make good decisions for us.
That'll about do as an introduction. We'll pick up my conversation with Wiley as she started to tell me about the economic impact of farmers markets in the province. So Wiley, I'm curious to ask you about this economic impact study of farmers markets in the province that the report for which was recently released. So if I'm correct, this was a study by Dr. David Connell at University of Northern British Columbia, examining the economic impacts of farmers markets in the province. What can you tell me about that? How is BCAFM involved? And after that, I want to ask you about some of the results of the study.
I love this study, I have to say. We did a study, Dr. Connell, this is the third study he's done for us. And so we did one in 2006, we did one in 2012, and then we had wanted to do one in 2018. And unfortunately, we weren't able to access any funding at that time. So we finally got the study done through a lot of our own resources and with some financial support from the Ministry of Agriculture, because we want it to be real and authentic. It's important to us that we have that connection with post-secondary. And again, the results from the study were exactly what we were hoping for. to show that the growth and the importance of markets within their community.
And maybe you can talk about a few highlights from that study then. What really stuck out for you?
There were a few things within the study that personally struck me as being really important. I mean, obviously, the fact that the annual direct sales and the economic impact has grown substantially. I mean, we saw 28% growth from 2012 to 2023. Dr. Connell did adjust for inflation with the 2012 numbers. So that growth rate is a real 28% growth. But some of the things that really stood out for me is when we look at things like the average number of shoppers per hour. In general, most communities were seeing some really good increases within the number of shoppers. We were pretty happy with that. There were some other things in terms of showing how often people shop at the market. And the reason that's important for us is that we want to be able to look at how do we change a first-time shopper or a rarely shopper to a regular shopper. And so that tells us how we've been able to move the bar on that, where we're seeing some successes. And I think individually, and again, I'm going to bring this back to the Quesnel market. The Quesnel market, for last year's study, we did 24 markets. Our markets are open for 5 hours. So you think over a course of a year, the farmers market was actually only open for 120 hours. And in that 120 hours, we had 873,000 indirect sales, which meant that for every hour that the farmers market was open, we put through over $7,200.
I hadn't thought about it that way. That when you really look at the sales of markets compared to how the length of time they're open, it's actually an impressive amount of commerce takes place in a short period of time.
That's exactly my point. Is that so compare that number to other local retailers or to other sectors that are doing this type of thing. For an outdoor retail mall, I gotta say, that's pretty impressive. And so it really gives us an idea of where we fit into the economic cosmos of each community.
But I just want to tease that apart a little bit, because I'm curious to know, do you think that it's better to think of it our markets as these markets that are open quickly, people can come and get what they want, they close, and therefore don't otherwise impact the general geography that they take place in? Or do you think that it more speaks to an opportunity or a need to expand markets operational hours? Like, how do you think about it when in terms of that kind of factoid or data set you just shared?
When we look at where shoppers are buying groceries, and again, there's a chart on this within the impact study, and we can see that during the market season, shoppers are coming to farmers markets, you know, about once every 2 weeks on average. They go to large grocery stores slightly less than that. But there's other things, you know, that they're doing less. They only shop direct from the farmers markets maybe once a year. How do we move people from going to grocery stores to buying more locally produced products? I think that you know, there's more that we could do to move some of those bars. And so looking at sort of that economic impact, and of course, that doesn't even get into the fact that if they come to a local market, they're frequently spending at neighboring businesses. And we've been able to track that as well. So we've seen a 61% growth in shoppers spending at local neighboring businesses. And so it's good for the whole region. If you have a market, it brings people to a location. You know, they're spending their money there, whether it's at the market or at a neighboring business. So I think there's a lot of things that we can take from that, that we're still, the impact study is new for us. We're still looking at how we can use the information.
There are a lot of positive numbers in this report. 155 million in sales total for BC AFM markets in 2023, an estimated economic impact of 233 million, just about. Lots of other really encouraging numbers. One number that stuck out that seemed maybe more of a concern that I want to ask you about is when the study looked at the average amount spent per shopper, Wiley, comparing 2012 to 2023, once you adjust for inflation, the numbers, there was only a 5% increase. So 2012 adjusted is $40.58 average spend. 2023, $42.50. So I'm wondering if that says that we're not seeing enough increase in diversity of what's available at markets, or maybe it says that there's still a bit of a ceiling to what people are willing to spend. And maybe that's because the products at markets are more expensive compared to the grocery store. Those are just a few of my conjectures. What do you read from that statistic?
You're right. That is a smaller increase than we saw in some of the other categories, but it is still an increase. So I'm going to take the win.
I'm going to stop you there because I think this is really important. I'm also, by the way, I haven't even told you in this interview, I've been a mixed veggie grower. I spent a number of years at the farmer's market previously. The other thing that stuck out is that we've seen such increases to the price. Let me just stick with farm products, right? Like we've seen quite an increase. So, that's also what surprised me is when I look at those numbers, I think, well, doesn't that imply people are actually buying less farm goods from the market if we've only seen that 5% increase? And yet since 2012, we've seen a much bigger increase in the price of those items. Sorry to cut in there, but I wanted to make that point as well.
Yeah. Well, I think that we're seeing increases. So the increase that each shopper is spending is average, provincially averaged, is about the same. In my region, it happens to be less than that. In Vancouver, it's more than that. But we are seeing more shoppers, and so the overall spend is more. And so, you know, we're getting a lot of these increases to vendors, you know, that are making more money because we have more shoppers that are spending the average. I don't agree with you, and I think that if we want to talk about this more later, that I think it's a misconception that markets are expensive. Certainly, you know, prices have gone up. We're certainly not adverse to the increases in input costs. However, I do not believe that markets on average are more expensive than a grocery store.
Oh yeah. To clarify, I was just referring to general inflationary price increases, not that market products are overpriced. I think it is fair to say that, locally produced food tends to cost more than commodity system food that you find at the grocery store. So I was referring to that, and just the general increase in price and whether that's a concern that number in 2023 of an average of $42.50 a shopper, you know, whether it's concerning that is only a 5% change. As you say, 28% increase in overall sales at farmers market since 2012. So that reflects if we've only seen a 5% increase in spending per shopper, that means there's a lot more people shopping at farmers markets. And I think that's good news. But as a farmer and a former farmer's market, it's just that one number concerns me. Like what, I'm just trying to figure out what it says about why people aren't spending more by now.
I think what it says is that there are a lot more pressures on people's pocketbooks, and that buying food is simply one of a number of expenses that people are balancing and that they're trying to do the best they can.
So Wiley, back to the overall results, which as we've discussed are really quite positive. What do they tell us? What can BCAFM, where are they going to take these results? How can this be functional for the BCAFM going forward?
Yeah. Well, I think that it's functional for us because it gives us bona fide data that we can take forward to the ministries and our partners that we work with. Because we've known through discussions with the markets that we've known that they're seeing more shoppers. We're knowing that vendors are being successful. We know that we have more vendors, But now we have the data to back that up. And that means that when we're talking, you know, to the Ministry of Tourism, if we're applying for grants through other ministries, Ministry of Health, Agriculture, whatever it may be, if we're working with Small Business BC or Small Business Canada, we now have the data that says we, in fact, are a player and you need to pay attention to us. We need to be at the table because we have something to offer. And that is incredibly valuable in making sure that we can support our vendors and our markets, that we can ensure there's sustainability. You know, we need our vendors to be sustainable in order for our markets to be sustainable. So it's a real circular system. But I think what this does is it helps us to prove our point that markets need to be paid attention to and that we need resources to actually do even better.
Okay, well, that leads to my next question. What do farmers markets in BC need currently to make progress or to increase success?
What we can see from the study and our membership report and other things that we've involved ourselves in with our partners is that there's a real lack of capacity within markets in terms of paid staff. We still have a number of markets that are totally volunteer run throughout the province. And when we see the difference between our small and our large markets, one of the big differences is that larger markets have paid staff. Smaller markets have volunteers. And so for a market to be able to make that jump, to becoming bigger, to attracting more, to be able to provide more services to their vendors, having that paid staff is a real game changer. So I think that's one thing that we're going to be looking at more. I mean, it's not that we haven't been, but I think we'll be looking at it some more in how can we provide more support and services so that we can encourage markets to make that jump. And I think one of the things that we've done really well over the past few years is change some of the language that we use around farmers markets. When I joined the farmers markets, I think the preconceived notion that most people had was that vendors at markets were a bunch of hobbyists, that they were just doing this for the love of markets. And what we have seen over time is this change in language, and certainly from the study, we can see that, you know, we're not just a bunch of hobbyists, that this is business. And so that language of business is important to us. We talk about how markets are business incubators. We talk about sales channels and marketing channels. But part of that is making sure that the vendors have really good foundation business practices, and making sure that vendors know, you know, how to do a really good business plan, that they look at their revenue mix. And I think that's something that we're going to continue with in the future is making sure that not only are our markets being able to build capacity, but our vendors have the tools to build capacity.
I'm curious to know, because every farmer's market is located within a specific or unique locality, right? And in most cases, a municipality, not always. I'm kind of curious to ask you if you could give me a sense of the kinds of things a town can do to be really supportive of a farmer's market versus examples where a lack of support from a local government or town or municipality can hinder or hold back the progress of a farmer's market.
I would have to say that the majority of markets are on public property. So whether that be, you know, city property or school property. And provincially, what we see is a real range of rental fees within that. And we do see some municipalities, some, you know, communities that charge rental rates that, in my personal opinion, are extreme for what the markets bring to the table, for what the benefits to the community that they bring. And yet they're not necessarily getting that respect from the municipality. So I think that there is still work to be done, working with municipalities to get them to understand that it's a benefit for them to have the market there. They need to make it a little easier. But everything from, you know, providing garbage containers, access to washrooms, depending on what type of land you're on, you know, parking, you know, sometimes, you know, easing parking restrictions for the hours of the market. So there's some things along those lines that I think that our partners could really do a better job of in general. Not to say that there aren't some communities that are amazing, because there really are. And I think we need to do perhaps a better job in the future of highlighting the markets and the communities that are doing really well with those things, so that other communities can have those examples.
Do you care to highlight a community that has done a particularly good job of supporting its farmers market to help it thrive?
No, because I'm actually drawing a blank. I mean, it's like, okay, so this one does it good for this, but I don't know if they want me telling people that. So let's just not go there.
All right. Well, a somewhat related question is, I was interviewing a farmer a few months ago, and we got talking about farmers markets in the province, and he really made a case that municipalities, market organizers, the BCFM, should try harder to find sites that aren't just functional but beautiful. Too many concrete parking lots that I think often are quite functional, but just not a very nice setting for a market. I'm wondering how you, as a farmer's marketer and a board member, do you think that a better case should be made for finding more enjoyable or picturesque environments for farmer's markets?
I think that would be awesome. I'm not sure it's always feasible. So what each market tries to do is to be where people can reach them. There's no point in having a market in a beautiful park setting if it's difficult for shoppers to actually get there.
Absolutely. I guess to me, a nice kind of hybrid in terms of trying to create a setting that's more enjoyable. So like, I'm thinking about two different markets right now. I'm thinking about Penticton's AFM associated market, which is right down at like a main street in Penticton. And so that street gets shut down, and I used to market there, and it was a really great environment, really nice, still concrete, but you've just got like the downtown setting all around you, versus where I live now in Vernon. Great market as far as what's on sale there and the support from the community, like the actual shoppers, as well as the diversity of what's available in a big parking lot. Great parking options for market goers. Just kind of not what anyone would consider like a nice setting. And I guess I was partially just wondering, granted, you're not always going to get like a nice park grassy area, but some of this is going to depend on how much support the community is giving and the attitude that business vendors in the community have, or the municipal government has in terms of being creative or being willing to kind of make compromises to have a setting that's really nice.
I totally agree. Is that it would be great to have, you know, everybody at really attractive sites, and because I think the visual cues that shoppers get within a market, you know, if there's rest areas, if there's grass, if there's some shade from trees, the shoppers can feel that when they're shopping. It tends to change the atmosphere. Frequently, you know, if people are on concrete all the time, you get that hustle bustle. Maybe shoppers are going through a little faster. So I don't know. I don't know if there's an easy answer to that. I think that each community does the best they can.
Wiley, I've wondered if you've thought much like or seen much outside of the British Columbia context. Essentially, I want to ask you, like, how can we or might we think differently about how farmers markets are scheduled or structured? Can you think of any regions elsewhere that are doing things differently than we tend to do here that might be interesting to consider here? Like, case studies, I guess?
You know, each country, you know, builds their markets based on what their local rules and regulations are. I'd like to see, you know, some changes to how food is treated within Canada, within the North American market. You know, when I go down to New Zealand, you can buy milk at the local farmers market. I would love to be able to do that within Canada. Mm-hmm. And our rules don't allow that. So I think that, you know, there needs to be some ongoing discussion and dialogue about how can we have more food for our communities, because we could certainly have more food and more varieties of food at any one of our markets. We are limited by the rules and regulations that we have to work under from the Center of Disease Control. I think that we treat food as a commodity. We treat it as something to be feared, and we've established rules to treat it that way. And I don't think that when we travel to other countries and see their relationship with food, it seems to be in some areas a little more normalized, where you can access fresh food easier from your local community than we can here.
Can you think of any examples on the food safety front where you feel a little frustrated at a rule that is applied to food sales at the farmers market?
Well, I think that the one about the local milk that I mentioned, you know, when we go to other countries, you know, we don't have those same issues. Eggs, which we do sell a ton of eggs at our local markets. But we have rules that we have to follow in terms of storage and refrigeration. And again, we don't have those in other countries.
But is it the health issue, or is it that we have supply managed systems here that place pretty tough limits on the availability of those products outside the mainstream grocery system?
No, those are health issues.
Oh.
Yeah, those are health issues. I mean, the eggs, for example, I don't know very many egg producers who wash and refrigerate their own personal eggs. But in order to sell the eggs, we need to wash and refrigerate them.
Right.
Eggs are a perfect food. And so, you know, when you're in European countries, you know, Italy and France and those types of things, eggs are unwashed and sold on the counter.
Mm-hmm.
There doesn't seem to be that fear that something could happen, you know, that you could eat a bad egg or something. And you know, in the history of markets and local egg producers, you know, you never hear about recalls or problems with food from a farmer's market. So it I think that in terms of safe supplies, we're pretty awesome. It comes down to good husbandry, but we still have these rules. And so, you know, eggs and milk, the difference between frozen meat and selling fresh meat, which, you know, we're starting to be able to do, but the rules are pretty cumbersome.
And is that another example in other countries you've seen more availability of fresh meat?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Those are good examples. So Wiley, earlier you highlighted farmers markets as a great entry point for new businesses, right? And I totally agree with that. As you know, I was a new farmer once, and the farmers market was one of my first marketing channels. Low barriers to entry, affordable, really great for that. But I'd like to talk to you about retention, because there's many great features of farmers markets, but they also have some structural realities, I think, that can ultimately lead farmers to seek other marketing channels. I can think of a few colleagues who were doing substantial sales at a farmers market who moved on and decided to focus on kind of direct-to-household programs instead. And I'm just wondering, like, how does the BCAFM think about farmer retention, and what is it doing, or what does it need to do to retain farmers over the long term. And I'll just name one structural challenge with the farmers market that I know you would be aware of. I certainly was as a marketer, which is just the reality that you bring a lot of inventory to market, especially for me as say a veggie vendor, and you know often you bring home inventory that you had hoped to sell because maybe it rained that day. So that's just one example. But how does the BCAFM think about farmer retention?
That's a great question. And I think that BCAFM looks at that as a multi-layered process for us, because we have so many success stories of vendors going into, you know, national retail or starting restaurants, where it all started at the farmers market, where it gives them that entry and that time to develop and to move on if they want to. But they wouldn't have been able to move on if they hadn't had the markets there to start with. You know, so BCAFM, you know, encourages diversification of products at farmers markets from existing vendors. You know, it's the idea of creating jams to extend a farmer's product line into winter, collaborating with other vendors, creating value-added foods or, you know, foods for food trucks and that type of thing. I think that farm and food vendors move on. That's the nature of being a business incubator and a retail marketplace. So as with all retail spaces, I think vendors are going to go on to do other ventures. And we want to encourage that growth because I think it reflects well on us. That without us, they wouldn't have had that opportunity for a viable business. And if we want a strong local agriculture, that's what we want. We want them to be successful in and out of farmers markets.
And on speaking of a strong local agriculture, do you think that BCAFM or individual member market specifically are doing enough to ensure access for farmers compared to the other types of vendors? Is that a priority, or is it currently enough of a priority? I'm talking about markets that are where getting a spot is competitive.
Yeah, there are certainly markets where the process to get in, I think particularly with the Metro Vancouver markets, you know, it's pretty competitive to get into some of those places. They have the surrounding population density that if you can get into one of those markets, you know that you're going to be, you're going to be selling stuff. I think that, yes, markets do try to prioritize farmers and ranchers. And certainly there's a requirement from a governance structure that farm and food is the majority of products that are at a market. But I think that the markets want to have more farm and food. It's sometimes a question of who's applying for that market.
So one final question about farmers markets then. I think there are examples of markets that have policies in place to allow the leadership of markets to be discerning and restrict who is allowed access. Even if we're just talking about farmers, I'm talking about policies where, you know, we don't want to see too many veggie vendors because that just waters it down for everyone. Like trying to be thoughtful or restrictive to ensure that there's not oversupply of a certain type of good. And there are benefits to that, but there are trade-offs because that can quickly turn into kind of market control by those who are in the market and doing well. And I'm wondering, I'm just curious to know as a farmer's marketer yourself, where you land on those types of policies. If you're more in favor of if there's space, we should allow someone in regardless of what farm product they have, or whether you're actually supportive of trying to place restrictions so that we don't have oversupply of certain goods.
I can tell you where I personally sit on this. BCAFM doesn't have a position on this. And again, it comes back to because markets are all individually responsible for themselves. So that level of governance is certainly not something that the BCAFM is going to get involved in unless the market asks us for help. And sometimes they do. I tend to land on the let everyone in and let the market sort itself out. You know, shoppers are going to prefer to shop at some vendors than others. And I think that vendors need to up their game and be able to produce and provide what customers are asking for. And they need to be able to sell to the shoppers to get that message across. at the same time, I recognize the fact that, yeah, I mean, if you have, you know, 10 carrot vendors, that maybe nobody's going to do well and you're going to lose somebody who's been there for 10 years because they're done with it. So, you know, this is why that's such a tricky question. It's one that every market struggles with. I don't think I've never had a conversation with a market where they've been entirely happy with how that particular area is managed. Everyone's trying to improve, but it's hard.
Does the BCAFM take a position on privileging of more senior vendors at a market? For example, I know of markets that kind of have vendors that have been there a long time and have grandfather clauses, for example, where they get to have a double stall and no one else does.
Nope. No.
Does Wiley Bystedt have a position on those types of policies?
So here's the thing. Again, the BCFM doesn't have a position on that detailed level of governance because, quite frankly, it's none of their business. You know, markets are responsible for governing themselves. But as long as, you know, they're not, you know, markets aren't allowing reselling, as long as they're following, you know, health guidelines, as long as everybody is safe, I don't think BCFM wants to wander in there. It's really not something that I don't think it would be good business for us to get into the weeds like that.
Wiley, we've gone over time here, so I promise I will wrap this up soon. But I in learning that you're a rancher, which I didn't know before this call, I can't help but ask you one or two quick farming questions before we go.
Sure.
If you have time. What is a really pressing need or concern in your own farming operation right now? You know, what's got you stressed out, or what are you worried about as you look toward the future?
Gosh, as a rancher, what's not stressing me out? I think that the access to abattoirs continues to be an issue, but yeah, the ability for us to get fresh product to customers is based on when I can get something scheduled, and that's a hassle. Input costs are a fact of life. Everything is going up right now, which means that ultimately our costs are going to be going up. But we're certainly not the only ones that's happened to. But I think that one of the other things is that what I'm seeing is that so I do pork and have tried a couple different breeds. But traditionally what we've seen is sort of these, you know, what people refer to as the pink pigs, you know, the Yorkshire Landreths, the crosses or those types of things. We're seeing now some things like Kunkuns and Manglies. And some crossbreeds that have different growth patterns and growth rates and finishings. And so I think along the lines of people wanting to have, you know, teacup dogs, that we're seeing some breeding changes within some livestock that I'm not sure is a really good idea. And so I'm, you know, when I look around for, you know, so for pork breeds, you have to be careful about now what your breeding is actually like, where that wasn't necessarily a concern even 2 or 3 years ago.
And just really quickly back to your first comment about abattoirs. Do you see any promise with like the recent update to regulations in the province around farm gate licenses, any opportunities or changes? Like, is it going to make things better in where you are in the province?
Yes, I hope so. In the long term, I think the farm gate and the farm gate plus licenses are definitely a step in the right direction. I would encourage every rancher to make sure that they have one or the other. If they're able to, because it, I mean, 10 years, no, not even 10, you know, back in 2010, we used to be able to take a bucket of grain out into the field and the cow would put its head in the bucket and we would shoot it. And I'm hoping this isn't too graphic.
No, not for this podcast. Nope.
Okay. So, And the benefit to that was there was absolutely no stress. I mean, the cow didn't even see it coming, right? I mean, literally died with their head in a bucket eating grain in their own field, you know, and then we'd be able to clean up the carcass, drive it 20 minutes to a federally inspected cut and wrap shop. We went from that which you know, now seems like the dream to this overly complicated system for abattoirs that just increased the cost for abattoirs, made it harder for ranchers to access, and ultimately, you know, it was the consumer that lost out because they saw price increases and some foods became harder to get depending on the season.
The consumers and even, I think you were implying earlier, the livestock in terms of the last hours of their lives.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, the stress, you know, I mean, so I went from that to, you know, having to load and haul, you know, livestock, you know, for 2 hours to get to my nearest licensed facility, which did a great job. But, you know, that's a day for me to have to do that, which, you know, based on how we were able to do it before, was, you know, unnecessary for the scope and the level that we were at. It made something that was working for a producer and the community and made it unworkable. And I think this goes back to my earlier comments about how, you know, in North America, you know, we tend to treat food as if it's dangerous. And I think to the detriment of everybody.
Wiley Bicet, I clearly am going to have you back on sometime to talk more farming, but I really appreciate that you join me to talk from the perspective of the British Columbia Association of Farmers Markets. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you very much, Jordan.
All right, that's the end of this episode. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to Wiley for joining me. And thanks to Vanessa Samour for producing the intro and outro music for the show. Please check back here soon for more long-form conversations with people from BC's ag sector. If you have suggestions for future guests of the show, I'm all ears. podcast@farminginbc.ca. Finally, if you're a farmer in British Columbia, remember, we have a lot more in common than all our differences would suggest. I'm Jordan Marr, and I'll talk to you next time.